Welcome to Built to Go, a Van Life Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Wagg, coming to you from the College of Curiosity. And this week is going to be tricky. Stop the music. Time out. Stop. Okay, here's the problem. I am very, very high. I don't mean in altitude. I'm actually at about only 650 feet here. I am under the influence of some fairly strong narcotics post-surgery. I had surgery last week, and these narcotics are affecting me quite a bit. Not only that, I have my left foot in basically a cast, and I can't get to my desk where my recording equipment is. And so part of me was like, I should just not do this. And then another part of me was like, yes, I should do this. So I'm listening to that second part, but please know going into this that that second part is a little bit drug-addled. And because of that, I'm simply not going to edit this podcast. This is going to be completely stream of consciousness, although I do have a script. I do have an outline. We're going to go with that. But you're going to hear funny noises. I understand the audio quality is bad, and I'm sorry about that. I've done the best I could from where I am. In the background, I have a YouTube channel playing some ambient summer campfire sounds that hopefully will make this a more pleasant experience. But yeah, it's time for a podcast. I have an obligation to you guys to get a podcast out every week. I wasn't able to meet that last week. I'm going to do it this week. It isn't going to be the best episode, but I'm going to give it my best. So, heck, if you want to skip this one, I certainly won't mind. But maybe you don't. Maybe it's time to just have a chat. And, you know, these are really interesting times we're living in. And, yes, I do mean in the apocryphal Chinese curse sort of way. But I think this is the best time ever for van life. Yeah, that's right. I don't know, is that optimism? Is that hope? Is it warranted? It doesn't matter. Because when I consider everything as a whole, and I look at all the suffering and impending suffering and the chaos and the jubilation, there's lots of happy people right now. When I look at all this stuff, I come to the conclusion that things are going to be really interesting for the time being, but they're also going to be really hard to predict. And when things are really hard to predict, the best thing you can be is flexible. And I think the best way to be flexible is to have a camper van. No, I mean, seriously, it's a little bit deeper than that. I mean, first off, there's the basic fact of, if you have a vehicle you can live in and travel in that has everything you need in it, you're pretty darn flexible. You can get up and boogie if you need to. You can spend a night in a friend's driveway anytime you want. You can do a lot more things than if you just have, you know, your basic Toyota Corolla that has maybe a blanket and some stale crackers in the back. Having a van right now is a clear bonus. And yes, gas prices might go way high and this thing might cost you more gas, etc., etc., etc. But overall, having a van right now that you can travel in is a really, really wonderful thing. And, well, I have a van I can travel in. I just can't get to it. I am laid up right now with this stupid ankle, and I am stuck in these two worlds between being really fuzzy-brained, like I am right now, or in so much pain that it's a distraction and I can't get anything done. So I'm waffling between those worlds. This will end eventually, but for now, that's where I am, and wow, there's nothing I would like better right now than to be able to go out in my van and just sit there and take stock of all the stuff I have and all the abilities that stuff gives me. And I don't mean in a, wow, look at all the stuff I've collected way. I mean in the, wow, I'm really ready for just about everything in this van. What a great time to have a van and do some van life. Now, for those of you who are aspirational van lifers, you haven't actually gotten a van yet, You're interested. You want to do it. You're not sure if you have the skills or the money or anything, but it's interesting. Well, just do it. What the heck are you waiting for? Another thing about times of uncertainty is Well, you don't know what's going to happen. You may be less able to do this a year from now. You could be more able to do it. Maybe everything's going to turn out wonderful. The economy's going to roar to life, and everyone's going to have a lot more spending money. Cars are going to come down in price. It could happen. I don't know. I am certainly not going to predict anything for the time being. But I can tell you that right now, if you have the ability to start working on making yourself a van, and of course by a van I mean any kind of vehicle you can live and travel in, whether it be a smart car or a bus or an RV or whatever, I don't think there's a better time. In fact, I urge you, stronger than I ever have before, to start making that happen today. If you've already got a vehicle, great. Really now, commit. I've said this a few times in the last few podcasts. It's time to commit to doing it because you are not going to regret it this year. Now, you don't want to go broke. You don't want to hurt yourself financially. You have to weigh out a lot of things. Everything about van life is a compromise. But now is the time. And if you've been waiting for someone to tell you, okay, now it's time, or you're waiting for someone to give you permission, yes, you may do this now. Here it is. Now is the time. Yes, you may do this now. And not only that, you should do this now. Why? Yes, flexibility is a great thing to have in times of uncertainty. Yes, you should do things when you're able to do them because you might not be able to do them in the future. But more than that, the two things I think we need most in the world right now, and I'm going to keep hammering this point over and over and over again, are kindness and creativity. Now, kindness can be just an opportunity that you see and you take advantage of, or it can be an act of will where you force yourself to find that opportunity or make that opportunity. We are going to need tons of that. We never don't need it. Is that good English? It probably isn't. But we always need it. That's a better way of saying that. That's an easy one. But the other aspect is creativity. And it's in that spirit that I am producing this imperfect, terrible sounding, unorganized podcast that I'm giving you today. Because this is what's going to keep me sane. And I think it might be what keeps you sane. No creative effort is ever a failure. You may have goals you don't reach. You might start building a van and realize that this isn't for you. You don't want to do this after all, and you're going to not stop it. Fine. The creativity that you put into that was not a failure. It is an accomplishment. It is something you did. Because before you did it, you didn't even try. You didn't know what it was like to start building out a camper van. And now you do. Now you know more. Now you're better informed. And for those of you who finally do build your camper van, congratulations! That is a major accomplishment. I can't tell you what a win it was for me personally to finish my first camper van. I had just come off of a series of failed projects, and I was feeling pretty down about it. I had tried a whole bunch of different things that just had no uptake. Nobody was interested in them. They didn't do anything I wanted. And, you know, I don't regret doing those things, but the fact that they didn't accomplish the goals I had set for them was heavy. It was a lot to carry. So I stopped doing anything. No, I didn't stop doing anything. I built out a van. I decided that was the time to give myself permission and commitment to build out a van. And I did. And my first attempt at it, it was done. I could do anything I wanted, but I didn't really like it. So I took it all apart and I did it again. And then I really liked it. And apparently 500,000 new people on YouTube like it too, because it's my most popular video ever. The just throwaway tour I did. Anyway, sometimes creativity is spontaneous and low effort. Sometimes it is well planned out and high effort. But its success, if you base that on popularity, isn't proportional to those two things. So that's another lesson. Anyway, if you are stuck in a cycle where you're just watching the news and doom scrolling and seeing all the stuff that's happening, and you're frustrated that you don't have any power to fix this, you can see a need for things to be fixed, but you can't fix them, you may end up in this cycle of frustration that I've experienced myself. But I'm telling you right now, the cure for that, short of actually being able to fix things, is kindness and creativity. Those two things put together. I feel like we need a word that combines kindness and creativity. I mean, I suppose if you start a nonprofit that creatively helps people, that would be a combination of the two things. But I don't think you need to combine them. I think one will lead to the other. Look for opportunities to be kind and look for opportunities to be creative. And do not beat yourself up if you don't reach your goals, because your primary goal is to be creative in the first place. And the moment you start, you've accomplished that and you've instantly won. You are a winner from that point on. Special thanks to Nate and Dave. Thank you so much for your support. They both bought diesel for me at at buymeacoffee.com/builttogo. That's two T's, not three, not one. This is how we keep ads off the podcast. Folks, go to that website, buymeacoffee.com/builttogo, and that's it. They buy me some diesel, and that makes enough money for me to pay for the costs that I have with the podcast, the hosting software, etc. So, thank you guys for doing that. I'm very happy to have no ads. Thank you very much to the monthly subscribers. And that's it. No more talk about that. Thank you. Van life news. Okay, news. I almost didn't include a news section. The bottom line of all this news is things are chaotic. All your plans may be upended this year, so you have to be flexible. So keep all that in mind. But here are some specific things that I think you should know about. First, in retaliation for the new taxes that are being placed on goods from Canada coming into the U.S., Canada has put in their own taxes, and then there's this tit-for-tat, whatever. It's all over the news, and I don't have to go into that. But one thing that's not getting reported is that the Pacific Crest Trail, a very popular hiking trail, used to have a part that crossed into Canada, and hikers were exempt from going through any kind of passport control or anything like that. That's all gone now. Yeah, Canada said, all right, well, we're getting rid of that. So if you had planned on hiking the Pacific Crest Trail this year, be sure you go and look at what's changed there. I have a link in the show notes from backpacker.com. They're pretty up to date on this stuff. But yeah, this is the kind of unexpected thing that we're going to see a lot of this year that can really mess up your plans. So it's probably not the end of the world, but if you were planning on doing that, make sure you go check that. Also, if you were planning on going to a U.S. national park this year, well, they may not be open. Or if they are, they may not be properly staffed. Basically, the incoming administration rescinded all hiring for all the national parks this year. The way this usually works is the national parks hire a lot of people for the season, and they're temporary jobs. They're just for the season. College kids, people just out of college, sometimes retired people, all these people apply for these jobs that last, say, 6 months. And that all happens in the winter before the parks open. And that has pretty much already happened. All these people got job offers. They were all set. They'd probably made plans to move and everything. But all that's gone. All those jobs have been canceled. There are no people coming in for those jobs. And as it stands right now, basically the national parks won't have anywhere near enough staff. And they haven't for years. But we're talking a dramatic reduction in staff at the national parks. Now, it is February. What does that mean 2 months from now? I don't know. Again, we live in chaos. But the point is, national parks may be a more difficult place to visit this year. So, again, be flexible. I have a link in the show notes from Politico, but it's all over the place. You can find it anywhere. And last, prices are in flux. So, the last couple podcasts, I've been talking about these amazingly cheap lithium batteries, and I told you that I bought a couple because I was concerned that these new tariffs and taxes were coming that were going to mess up the prices. I bought a couple of 100 amp hour lithium iron phosphate batteries with a pretty good BMS for $120 each. And they're actually sitting on the floor right here. I haven't opened them up for obvious reasons. Well, those same batteries now are $150. Last week they were $160. And basically pricing is all over the place right now. We had seen a nice trend of these products going down in price, and now we don't know what's going to happen. So congratulations if you did buy these cheap batteries when they were available. There's still a couple out there that aren't quite as good, that are much less expensive than they were a couple years ago, but the trend has been broken. But more important than that, as part of the new tax tariff thing that we have going on with China, companies like Temu and Shine and Amazon Haul that I mentioned last time have lost the advantage that they had. So there was this loophole in customs law where it's called de minimis, meaning it's too small to be worried about. Where if you imported a truck into the U.S., that was pretty obvious. That would have to go through customs and have tariffs and taxes and things levied onto it. But something that was small, like say a little music box that cost 10 bucks, it wasn't worth the administrative time to even deal with that, so they would just let it through. And that's how Shine, Temu, Amazon Haul, Alibaba, all those companies were working, is they were sending these small packages through so that none of them had to pay these tariffs and taxes. And they did it in an interesting way. Instead of sending over a container load of widget A for $9.99, they sent over a container load of mail, each individual mail package containing one widget A. But each individual package was actually its own thing, and therefore it meant de minimis. Even though the contents of the container could have been worth several hundred thousand dollars, they weren't tracked that way. They were tracked as individual packages. And that's gone now. That went away as of yesterday or last night or whatever the heck's thing's going. So that means that pricing on Amazon Haul and Temu and Shine and all these other weird little companies is probably going to go up by at least 30% almost immediately. So yes, that's going to impact you too. So bottom line, it's time to be flexible, and it's also time to do what you can do when you can do it. Don't let any of this stuff stop you from building out your van. Absolutely don't do that. Don't let any of this stuff stop you from traveling. Those things are important. You have to do those things. I'm being completely serious here. You have a life to live. Whatever politics is going on is beside that. You have a life to live. These are part of living your life. Don't let them get in the way. Tech Talk. Have you ever heard of Rust Converter? I'm not talking about Rust Remover or Naval Jelly or anything like that. I'm talking about Rust Converter. And the idea is that it's basically a can of black spray paint. At least that's what it looks like. And you spray it on rusty areas, and there's a chemical in there that interacts with the iron oxide, which is what rust is, and makes it form another hard substance that won't rust anymore. That's the concept. It's actually a concept that's been used on some really large projects. Like, there are major bridges in the world that were built in such a way that they will rust once, and that rust will create a protective coating, and then that's it. And this stuff sort of simulates that. What it does is it covers the rust, converts it into this other chemical that doesn't rust, and that prevents further rust. I have used this stuff. I had a 1980 Datsun 510 that I absolutely loved. Man, I still have dreams about this vehicle. And it had some really bad rust problems. And so, you know, I tried it, and yeah, it stopped the rust. It really did. There's a few problems with it, though. So, what are you going to use this on? If you have a little rust spot on the hood of your van from, like, a rock chip, this is not for that. This is not for that. This is for, like, a big rusty I-beam or some massive piece of metal that's covered in rust that you don't want to rust anymore. I mean, you could spray it underneath your vehicle all day long. That would be fine. But this is not for anything aesthetic. So, anything if painted that you can see that you care about, you wouldn't use this stuff. Also, don't do what I did. I took my back wheels off my Datsun and sprayed it on the drum brakes that were back there. Now, not on the brakes themselves, but on the drum, the outer coating of the drum, because it was rusty, and I was like, okay, we'll make it look a little better. What I didn't know is that this stuff, it forms a bond, and it actually sealed the drum onto the wheel, and when I went and had the brakes done, they couldn't get them apart. It basically made them into one piece of metal, and that's bad. So don't do that. So what is this stuff good for? Well, let's say you have an old Econoline 150, and it's kind of, you know it's at the end of its life, but you want to get it through a few more seasons. Yeah, you could go to town with this stuff. Crawl under the vehicle, clean it as much as you can, and spray everything that's rusty that doesn't move. Go ahead. It will at the very least slow down the rust, and in many cases it will actually stop the rust process, because rust is burning. That's what it is. Rust is very slow burning. The metal is burning, and to burn you need fuel and oxygen, and what this stuff does is it creates a barrier between the oxygen, whether it comes from water or air. The iron isn't hitting the oxygen, therefore you can't get iron oxide. That's basically how it works. Now, it's not going to add any structural strength. If you've got weak parts that are rusty, this isn't going to make them stronger. It's just going to kind of freeze them in place. So I think there are limited applications for this, and for those applications, it works well. But for anything that is structural, that's important, or anything that you want to last a really long time, you really have to cut away anything that's rusty and replace it with fresh metal. But I have a link in the show notes. The brand I've used is Seymour. It's between $15 and $20 a can, which is kind of a lot, except it isn't. If this actually solves your problem, it's not. So give that a look, but just file that away as something that exists that you may need at some point in your life. It's called Rust Converter, not Rust Preventer, Rust Converter. And whatever you do, do not spray it on your lug nuts, because you will never get them off ever again. Product review. So Chris from the UK sent me a very nice note. He's building out a van. He's actually had a very similar track that I have. He's gone from van to van to van, and right now he's building out a Sprinter bus, rather, as opposed to a Sprinter ambulance. And he was, trying to figure out what was the best way to do the sink and stuff, and he came across this product called Bixio, B-I-X-I-O, and they make a number of products, but what makes these things Bixio is they build them in what are basically milk crates. And so there's a toilet that's a milk crate, the entire toilet, everything you need in one milk crate. And the other big thing they have is the sink, and that's what we're going to talk about here. So imagine you have a milk crate, a black plastic milk crate, and everything you need for the sink is in that crate. It holds the fresh water, it holds the wastewater, it obviously has a basin, it has a faucet, and a way to make the water come out. And that way is not electric. The way this thing works is you pump it up. The freshwater tank runs on compressed air, and it has this bulb. And you pump up the bulb, and that pressurizes the freshwater tank, and then water comes out when you turn the tap. This is actually how RVs worked years ago. You used to, every time you got gas, you'd fill up the air tank, the water tank, with the hose that you do the. See, this is what happens when I don't edit. With the hose that you would normally use for the tires, you would actually apply that to the water tank and pump it up. And then, electric pumps are more reliable than that because you're not going to run out of pressure. Anyway, for this thing, that's how it works. And the advantage is that you end up with this one very discreet unit that's ready to go out of the box, and it's portable. And this is a great solution if you're doing any kind of truck camping. Like, maybe you use your truck to haul your gear, but then you have a tent and you're actually sleeping in the tent. You could easily pull this thing out, set it up on the tailgate of your truck, and have a nice wash station. It works. It's a great solution. And Chris was especially clever because he found other crates that matched this one. And he actually built himself like kind of a kitchen out of these crates. And he has the complete solution right there. So, I like this thing. I think it's a great idea, but I have two issues with it that I have to mention. The first is, it's small. You've got a small water tank, and you've got a small gray tank, and I think that's the problem overall. Now, if you're doing a weekend camping trip, that's fine, but if you're going to be living in a van for any length of time, you're going to run out of fresh water and you're going to fill up that gray tank very quickly. And then what do you do with it? And you kind of have to take the whole thing apart to deal with the tanks, at least the gray tank. So that's a little bit of a pain. So that makes me think this isn't a great solution for long-term van life. The other problem is the price. Based on what I described to you, how much would you think a milk crate that was also a sink would cost? Well, if you didn't guess $210, you'd be wrong, because that's what these things cost. So, how much is your convenience worth? How much is portability worth? It could be worth a lot. The idea of having a portable sink sounds actually really good. Imagine if you're going fishing out of your truck. Well, you have it in your truck, and then while you're camping in your tent, you use it, and then when you go fishing, you actually put it in your boat. You can use it to clean fish or wash your hands or whatever. I mean, that's pretty cool. But I think the price is a bit much. Now, you could build one of these yourself out of the components, but price-wise, I think you'd maybe save $100, but I don't think it would be as nice because this thing is perfectly matched for this. So, I've never tried it myself because I think it's too expensive for what I'm doing, but Chris has, and he likes it. So, I present it to you. You guys can make up your own minds. I have a link in the show notes to it right from Boxio. It's certainly not sponsored or anything like that, but it is a solution for getting an instant sink in your unit. And if you're doing a no build, well, it's kind of a no-brainer. You buy this, your plumbing's done, then you can move on to something else. Tales from the road. I like telling this story. I may have told it before, and I don't care. It's the story of how I met my wife. It was 2010 in March, and I had organized a cruise for the James Randi Educational Foundation called Skeptics of the Caribbean. And we had a good number of people, I don't remember how many, but they came from all over the world. We had people from Europe and Australia and Canada, and we basically explored the Caribbean and focused a bit on piracy and, you know, also skeptical stuff, because that's what we did. Randi was there, he gave talks, the late magician Mark Edwards was on the cruise with us. We had a really... Oh, I'm sorry. Again, I'm going to do this not edited, and this is the stuff that I edit out that you don't normally hear. Mark Edwards wasn't on that cruise. Mark Edwards was on an earlier cruise. I had forgotten that. This cruise, we did a skeptic camp style thing, which is where everybody kind of brings their own subject to talk about. We heard about a whole bunch of things. Wow, I'm sorry. But that's what you get with unedited. Anyway. My wife's name is Jennifer, and she signed up for this cruise. And I knew a lot of people coming on this cruise, but I didn't know her. And I'd actually never heard of her. Because of my position, I knew a lot of people in the skeptic community, but she was new to me. Well, you know, which is fine. We get new people all the time. I didn't think anything of it. We had a party at the building that the JREF was housed in the night before, and she wasn't there, and that was fine. I made sure she was okay, and she said, yes, she'd meet us at the ship, and she did. It was fine. The first night, we have our gathering, and I didn't make contact with her. So, again, that's fine. There's so many people, I don't typically meet everybody the first night. Totally fine. The next morning, I'm sitting out on the deck having breakfast at the buffet with a bunch of folks and, you know, just having a great time out in the Caribbean on the back of this ship. And this woman walks out. And she's holding a plate of bacon. I don't mean like a plate with a couple of strips of bacon on it. I mean a plate of bacon. And she just walks out and comes over to us and says, "Hi, I'm Jennifer. Would you like some bacon?" And at that moment, I realized that we were actually in the Bermuda Triangle, which is not a difficult place to get to if you leave from Southern Florida. And yes, at that moment, I was on the back of a ship in the Bermuda Triangle, and this strange woman I had never met before had just brought me bacon. And I'd like to say it was love at first sight. I'm not sure that's an actual concept, but it was certainly interest at first sight. And we did not spend a lot of time together during the cruise. I was busy doing things. I had to run the cruise and organize everything. But I did make note of her, and we shared a couple of drinks. And then after the cruise, she contacted me about something, and then I kind of started suggesting that, hey, you're kind of interesting. What if we got to know each other better, etc., etc., etc.? And then 4 months later, we were living together, and then we got married a couple years later. So, I like that story. I think it perfectly sums up our relationship. It is a great relationship. I am so fortunate to be in this relationship. I can't even tell you. And now we've been married for 12 years, and I just love being able to tell people, oh yeah, I met my wife in the Bermuda Triangle. She was holding a plate of bacon. A place to visit. Okay, this is getting a little bit more difficult because travel to places is a little trickier now because we don't know what's going to happen. But I assume this is still going to be a thing once spring gets here. And it's something I've done and it's a lot of fun. And you know whale watching where you get on a boat and you go out and you look for whales? Imagine doing that on land. And you're not looking for whales, you're looking for moose. Yeah, there are moose watching tours. If you go up to Maine, and you get further out in Maine, you know, don't go to Portland, you got to get further up. There are moose watching tours. And you load up in a van fairly late at night and head out into the rural parts of the state with a guide who knows where to go. And he's got a big flashlight and you look for moose. It is a quirky, really fun sort of thing to do. And no, you're not guaranteed to see a moose. But you are guaranteed to get out into the wilderness at night with somebody who knows what stuff is. And you might see bears, or bobcats, or moose, or something else. Owls, who knows? But it's an adventure. You're going to go out there, you don't know what you're going to see. And it was a lot of fun. I really liked doing it. It cost about $70. Sounds like a lot. Maybe it is. It doesn't matter. It's one of these really quirky, interesting things you can do that will give you stories to tell. And it's at night. So you can take your day to do whatever you want to do. Go hiking or go to L.L. Bean. Or that's not actually open 24 hours, so that one doesn't matter. But whatever you're going to do, you're going to do all the main stuff. And then at night, you can go out for a nice drive and look for moose. And let me tell you something, when you see the moose, they're impressive. They are very, very big. One of the problems with moose is that they're so tall that when they're in the road, their eyes don't light up with your headlights because they're way up high in the headlights. In fact, a lot of people who have hit moose, which is not a good thing, will often say, I was just driving along and then suddenly there were these trees in the road. And those trees are the legs of the moose. So it's fascinating to actually see them in relatively safe environments. but anyway, yes, I have a link in the show notes to one company that organizes them. There are many, and you probably should make arrangements yourself with somebody local to where you're going to be, of course. But the concept is real. I've done it. It's a lot of fun. And you might want to consider adding that to your bucket list of things you can do. Everyone you know has gone whale watching, but how many do you know have gone moose watching? Resource recommendation. Very quickly here, being creative is either an act of inspiration or an act of the will. You know how you can tell if you're a writer? It's because you're writing. It's easy to do creativity in writing when you're inspired. But to be really creative is to do it when you're not inspired, and it's an act of pure will. But there is help out there. There are sources that will give you a jump start. And I've talked about some before. One is the... Holy cow. Again, folks, unedited. This is what you get. Brian Eno has a deck of cards called Oblique Strategies. Holy cow. Oblique Strategies is a really interesting way to be creative. It's just a deck of cards that gives you something like Add More Africa or something like that that helps you with your creative process if you're stuck. Basically, it's a tool to beat writer's block. But this that I'm recommending to you here is from startofhappiness.com, and it's just a poster. You could print it out or whatever, but it's 29 ways to stay creative. And some of them are fairly obvious, like sing in the shower. You know, almost every time I take a shower, I give myself a lecture on the topic. It's a weird thing I do, but it happens. I will actually do an entire podcast in the shower. I'm on drugs, and I'm not editing this. This is really dangerous. But yeah, I will get in the shower, and I will do a podcast segment while I'm in the shower. And unfortunately, when I do that, when I get back to actually do the podcast, I feel like I've already done it, and then I don't redo it. So even if it's really good, it stays in the shower. Anyway, yeah, there's that. Drink coffee. Collaborate. Bring in other people. Break rules. Break rules is so important. You have to learn the rules and know the rules and know the rules are there, and then you have to break them. Have fun. Don't forget to have fun. Clean your workplace. This is a great way to be creative. If you're sitting at your desk and you're not getting anything done, clean your desk, and you will be amazed at what that can lead to. Don't force it. You have to encourage it, but don't force it. And don't forget to practice. Practice, practice, practice. If you want to write an article, but you're worried it's going to be terrible, don't write that article. Write a terrible article. Do that first. Get your juices floating. Floating? Get your juices floating! I think I just made something up. Okay, time for some more drugs. Anyway, this is all good advice, and this little chart here is just a kind of a nice thing to just put it up in your bathroom, put it up on the wall of your van, whatever. It might just be what you need to get going. And I'm going to mention one more, which is number 5. Quit beating yourself up. If you're being creative, you're winning. That's all there is to it. You may not get where you want to go, but you're getting somewhere. And that was the point of starting your journey, to move. So do it. Well, folks, thank you very much for listening to this rather unusual podcast. I feel like I say that every time. Anyway, I really, really appreciate you guys putting up with me, and hopefully things will be back to normal next week. I have a meeting with my surgeon tomorrow. We'll see what happens. Music, as always, is by Simon Wegg. And until next time, remember the words of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who said, "Human kindness has never weakened the stamina or softened the fiber of a free people. A nation does not have to be cruel in order to be tough."